You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet,
and story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You just have been listening to Alex Dormouse's band doing the song Hot Texas.
We're delighted that you're with us tonight. This is episode 139, when you want to go find it to rewatch it or to listen to it on Podbean. You're looking for 139. And Jim.
Who is our guest?
Who is our guest tonight?
Jeff Crawford.
Jeff Crawford is joining
us. We're
going to
talk about the Gold Series here.
Hello, Jeff. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor and a treat.
Oh, it's going to be fun. We appreciate you coming on.
So where are you joining us from?
I'm in western North Carolina, right at the bottom of the Smoky Mountains.
Okay. And Jim, you have a bio.
Think we have old Paso relatives there. We do, out in Raleigh
and so forth.
Are they watching tonight?
I don't know. I know they're hoping that we'll relocate there sometime. Yeah. Well, we're delighted to have you. Jim has a little bio.
We have
so much to talk about. Jim has a little bio to get us started.
Jeff Crawford was born in Western North Carolina and raised in Central Florida. He was a cowboy as a profession in his early teens, then moved into raising thoroughbreds and Chevrolet cattle. He now runs a family business, writes suspense novels in various genres. 56 novels to date. Wow. And still typing. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you.
I got to ask this question now.
Ask him.
You know, I'm familiar with some cattle, but... Chevrolet. Yeah. What kind of cattle are those?
They're originally a French breed. They are very, very large and very, very white. You see the big white curly ones? That's the Charolais breed. Okay. And we like those because if you take an average Angus calf when it's born, it's going to be 65, 68 pounds. And a Charolais may be 95 to 110.
Oh, wow. That's a big one.
So you've already got 2 months on the growth.
Yeah, you do.
Oh, how long have you been working with cattle?
Well, I started when I was 14, raising crossbred cattle with Daddy. And then I moved into horse farming when I was a senior in high school. I found out I didn't have to go to school. I had my requirements in. So I got a job at a ranch taking care of 120 horses for a man. And he graded me. And paid me besides, and that let me get my state farmer degree in FFA, which I really wanted to do. And then 2 days after I graduated, I was hired as the herdsman for the largest Charolais ranch in the Southeast. And that was pretty wild because everybody I knew that had that job was 40 and 50 years old, and I was 16.
That's pretty good.
But I did that, and I cowboyed around at different places, and I rope calves and rope steers on the weekends. And then eventually I moved into breeding and foaling on a thoroughbred horse farm and met a lot of famous people that owned a lot of famous horses.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. And then we decided to move back to North Carolina and me and Daddy raised our own line of registered Charolais here for 30 years.
Wow. Well, when did you start writing?
In 2011, I think it was, I had been kicking around the idea of writing a book that had all of the stories that I had gathered, from cowboy days, working horses, and from hunting and fishing since I was 5 years old. Had my own trap lines when I was 8. So I had all of these stories, and I could never decide if I wanted to do it or not. And then I found out I was going to have surgery that was going to sideline me for about 4 weeks. And I said, now's a good time to try writing a book. So I did, and it was horrible. And but it was a lot of fun to do. So I wrote another one and another one. And I ended up writing 9 books that nobody will ever see before I got the first one right. And that was the first one we published. And it was called With Sympathy for Job. And that went out in 2013.
Oh, my goodness. I know you have a question.
Well, I do. I want to go back to before the show started. We were talking in the green room, so to speak. Talk about bear hunting just for a minute. You actually like bears.
Yeah. Hunt bears and wild hogs and bighorn sheep and white-tailed deer and quail and go frog gigging and go fishing. I love it all. And there's a whole lot of fun in standing out there in the pitch dark waiting on somebody to come get you in 45 minutes away from the nearest person. And hearing the bear snapping those teeth behind you to let you know that they're there. It's a lot of fun. And I was raised doing that kind of stuff. I can remember having a shotgun in my hand before I ever learned to ride a bicycle. You know, so that's the way I was raised.
Most people, I would think, would just be a tad nervous thinking a bear was pretty close to them.
They should be.
That's their way of letting you know they're there. And a person with any good sense would be scared. And I missed the boat on that one.
That's very good.
Jeff, with all of those experiences, and you talked about working on those first 9 books that we'll never see, but how have those experiences, would you say, kind of informed your storytelling?
In too many ways for me to list. They gave me experiences. They gave me stories that I can steal or at least change. They gave me the ability to write without resorting to cliches and stereotypes. They gave me the experience. So if I say he dropped his dally, that isn't something I had to look up. I know what that is. You know, I know what it's like to sit on the back of a green horse. So all of those things figure into the books, whether I really mean for them to or not. It just comes out naturally. And that's the best part when you're a writer, when you don't have to grope and search for that, it just happens. And you just keep moving on. That's the best part. And I couldn't do that if it hadn't been for, the experiences I've had over the last 45 years.
Yeah.
So when it comes to research, you did it all, so to speak. So
I did it all so I wouldn't have to look it up, because I didn't I didn't like studying in the school, and I don't like doing it now.
Now, I know that you write Westerns, and we're going to be talking about that in greater depth shortly, but you also really enjoy horror.
I do. I love scaring the pants off of people. It is so much more fun to write dark and twitchy and edgy than it is to write about picnic baskets and daffodils. I really, and in fact, I got real lucky. And when I was asked to do a horror book by a publishing company to see if they wanted to look at me, for some reason, I decided to set it as a Western, and it ended up being a 6-book series that I got signed for. And, it may be the finest bit of writing I've ever done in those 6 books, because I can't think of anything that I would have changed.
Wow. Yeah. So, so now we're touching on Western, because we're talking horror, but it was Western. Why is the Western, or is it still relevant today? And if it is relevant, why is it relevant?
I think it is, but for the same reason it was when I was watching The Big Valley and The Virginian when I was 7 and 8 years old. I think it was relevant when my father was going to the nearest general store so he could listen to the Lone Ranger on the radio.
On the radio.
Cowboys, you know, in the, like in Yellowstone or the spinoff series, I've never seen those, but or in the movies now, everybody is drawn to the cowboy hero. No matter where you're at, people gravitate toward that. Because those guys do things their own way. And they're always there when you need them. And they always win in the end. So the Western is as long as people are reading and watching, I think the Western is going to be relevant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, so.
And we agree, but we know that it also kind of comes and goes in and out of fashion. But I think that those of us, sometimes I almost don't want to do something that is in fashion. That's because that's, I like to go opposite of the herd, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you's getting back to how I got started in the cattle and horse business. I never forgot the fact that there was a certain romance to the fact that all of my friends, when they graduated high school that next Monday, they put on khakis and Pinpoint Oxford shirts and went to work in an office, and I put on my spurs and my Resistol straw hat and went and got on a horse.
Yeah.
You know, so there's that little bit of a difference. And maybe I'm biased because I wanted to be a cowboy from the time I was 7 years old and I got to do it.
And you got to do
That's
it.
Great.
Yeah.
That was a big thing. You know, I got to do that.
Yeah. We're going to take our very first short break and we're going to talk a little bit about Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. They are our sponsors for this show, and they are all about writing and authors. If you are a writer, are you considering taking your book on the road this summer? Need assistance planning that trip? Maybe you'd like to increase your social media presence or refresh your website. Our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, are standing by to assist you. Contact them today and make your summer and fall plans. And now here is a word from Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. We'll be right back. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking to Jeff Crawford. And I think we're going to talk about what?
Yeah,
Marshall Micah Gold series.
Yes, we almost called you Jeff Gold, you know. slip of the tongue. Yes, this is Jeff's newest series. We're holding two of the books. I think five are in print now, right, Jeff? Available now, and books 6 and 7 are coming, right? Right?
Six came out in paperback today, and 7 is in process right now.
Okay. So this is, we're holding up the covers to book 1, which was Marshall Micah Gold's Rush, a Western adventure book 1. And then we have kind of the bookend to it, except now there are 2 more. This is Gold's Mine, and this was book 4. And Jeff was very kind to send these to us. And I'll tell you what, you just sit down, find yourself a quiet spot, have your favorite beverage, whatever that might be, and just don't multitask. Just get into these books. They are fast read, great characters, engaging plots, surprises, And let's talk about the series first, Jeff. Kind of what inspired this and where did it come from?
Well, it was inspired by my publisher. He said, you need to write a series about a U.S. Marshal. And I said, okay. And that's how it came about. And then I did a little more thinking about it. There you go. And I was trying to think of, I didn't want the Matt Dillon type Marshal. I wanted somebody who didn't look like a Marshal, didn't act like a Marshal, because that was one of his weapons. He could fly under the radar. He could blend in with the people he was about to, you know, cob on the back of the head. So he's a little bit rough and tumble. And the way he gets his start makes it even worse because he's carrying a pretty heavy load that you don't learn a lot about in any one book. You know, for a while, you just sort of get little hints. But he's kind of a rough old customer, but he's the one that if something had happened to somebody in your family, he's the guy you'd want to go out. He's relentless is my favorite way of putting it. He's relentless.
I guess he is, isn't he?
And no fear. No fear. No. I mean, he runs, you know, he runs toward it. If there's danger, he'd probably run towards that bear, right?
Probably.
Yeah, he probably would. The bear would be running the other direction.
He's very engaging. And there is a hardness to him. But at the same time, he is a man of great compassion. And he's fair. He really is fair. And but, you know, he's always right. Jeff, he's just always right, isn't he? He's just always right.
The one time he wasn't, ended up being wrong. So it's like we used to say in school, he's not conceited, he's convinced. Mm. He's convinced he's right all the time and nobody's going to change his mind much. But he's an extremely fun character to write because he wears a gray hat. He's not necessarily a bad guy, but he's not exactly a choir boy either. He'll bend the law to make it work for himself and he'll get the job done. And those are the fun guys to write about.
Yeah.
He's kind of cool. You know, you wrote that scene where he goes in the cafe, that restaurant, you know, and the other diners are kind of looking at him and he's in there by himself. And the other diners are kind of wondering, what is that? An itinerant, you know,
right.
Traveler? Or is it, you know, is it, he's not homeless, is he? You know, it's kind of, who is that guy? Yeah. He certainly doesn't have a Brooks Brothers suit on.
Oh, no.
No, he doesn't. He's an everyday guy. And you'll hear stories throughout the books where often he'll be standing right next to a man in a bar that he's about to arrest and the guy will buy him a drink, you know, or offer him a job or whatever. And next thing you know, he's sitting in a cell. So it works to his advantage to be that way.
Mm-hmm. And now he has just as you know, Gene Autry had Champion, and Rory had Trigger, and you know every major Tom Mix had Tony. He has a horse. What a horse! Tell us about Amos.
Amos is one of the few characters I've ever written as much about and said so little about. You don't get a big description of this horse. You don't find out what his beginnings were. You don't understand how long they've been together. None of that matters. All that matters is they're together now, and he would do anything for that horse, and the horse would do anything for him. And he's about, he has relationships with people. But he only has one friend, and that's his horse. The horse is who he talks to when he can't talk to anybody else.
Yeah. In book three, I think it's in book three, Gold's claim. Amos, they're riding along, and Amos suddenly is down. I think that's right, book three. And he's caught under the, you know, he's caught under the horse. Micah is caught under the horse. That's a really captivating scene. And we know if we've watched, you know, movies or Westerns, you know, we know when a horse and rider going down is very serious, even if we've never experienced it ourselves. And I know that I kind of held my breath through all of that because, of course, you could kill Amos off if you wanted to. You're the author. You know, you can, we could have a different horse. We could have Micah go into, you know, I guess it's a spoiler alert, but, you know, we could have Micah again go into grieving for, you know, this having to pick up and move on. But, you know, you could have eliminated him, but you chose not to. And it's a talk a little bit about how, and that whole thing. And then they meet somebody because of that. Do you write with an outline, or were you just writing along and all of a sudden Amos was down?
Yeah, no, I only outline about the last five chapters. And it's one sentence each, just so I'll know what to write that chapter about. The rest of it, mm-hmm. I sort of figure out as I go. In my younger days, because I like the shock value in a book, I might have killed Amos. I might have done something. But now I understand that I'm not writing just for me. I'm writing not for the reader to buy, but I'm writing for the reader to enjoy.
Yeah.
And I didn't think they would like something happening to Amos.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, what they need is a good Samaritan to come by. That's going to not only lengthen the story, but add to it. And so that's where the lady came in who raised horses and was such a, basically a vet. And she took care of Amos and nursed him back to health. And she wanted to do some of those same things to Gold because yeah. she knew he had been hurt too, a little bit deeper. So that's the reason she figured into that story.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Good Samaritan.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think I got to that character yet, have I?
No, you yeah. hadn't gotten into book three yet.
Yeah.
Shame.
It's okay. But Good Samaritans, you kind of populate the book with them, don't you? Because in book two, you know, here's another thing. What we really like, I should let you talk.
What's that like?
One of the things we really like, Jeff, as readers, is the way your books open. And it was true when I started the other series, The Black Files Agent. The way your books open, we as readers, we're clueless. It's like you've dropped us into something that's already going on. It's like we turned on a movie and we missed the first, you know, 45 minutes and we're trying to figure it out. You drop us in.
You know, that's an interesting concept, because in the first book, there's one chapter. They start reading that chapter, and we're getting into it, what's going on, and I think, who are we talking about?
Yeah.
All of a sudden,
yeah.
It turned out that was the bad guy we're talking about, as opposed to the marshal. Yeah. I mean, how interesting you take that approach.
It works for me. I don't have to start from scratch to fill everybody in, because a lot of the time I'm not sure what that beginning is, so I started in the middle of the story, and then as the story progresses, I know that I've got the outlet to go back and catch the people up, bring them forward to where the book had started, and then go forward. And see, you're basically working from the middle out. And for me, that's whether it's wise or not, I don't know. But it's completely natural for me to start a book that way.
I think it's pretty interesting, your approach. So, you know, Jeff, I think you can write these books faster than I can read them. Okay? I'm not a fast reader. See, Bobby stays up all night to read, see?
I have become a much quicker typist than I was 15 years ago. And I've learned how to access the ideas and the words. Right. When I first started, that wasn't there. I had to hope. But now I know where to look inside my mind for those words, for those ideas, for the correct way of putting them down. That's a big help.
Yeah.
To be able to do that.
Another thing, so often in a series, any kind of series, you have more than one character returning. And in this series, we have Micah and Amos. But we also, just like you drop us in and we're trying to figure out what's going on, we learn he's been doing this a while. And he'll go into town, into a town, and he'll go talk to the sheriff there. And it'll turn out that, oh, they do know each other. And we know that there was something before book one. There was Micah working. And with each book, we have a different sheriff. And in book two, is it book two? No, book three, where you start in the Tucson courthouse with a judge. Oh, Judge Oliver. Oh, my goodness. Where did he come from?
I found a smart alecky judge who did not like law benders. And so I tried to write where this judge would be. And then it was only natural for what Gold had to say, because he just said exactly what I would have said. Cause I'm a natural born smart aleck, and it's gotten me in trouble more than once. So, you know, as one of my grandpas used to say, you know, if you want a wise apple, go ahead, but you know, it's going to cost you. And that's what it did. Gold shot back and told him exactly what he thought of him, and it cost him.
Yeah.
He sure did. I mean, you threw him in jail. And then the sheriff there, Sheriff Masters, and it turns out, again, they have a relationship, but we don't know about it. It's you know, they maybe worked together on something in the past. But now we're in the third book, and one of the things I really liked about this particular book is we actually see a little character development with Micah. He actually listens to Sheriff Masters, who gives him some very good counsel and some very good advice. And Micah actually listens. You know, it's Micah isn't always, because you're not right. He's not going to take your advice because, you know, you're not right.
For the first time in maybe ever, writing that scene, he had found himself found his ox in a ditch, and he couldn't get that ox out. He was forced to listen to somebody else, somebody who had what we call institutional memory. This guy works with Judge Oliver every day. He knows how to get around him. And some other things. He had a little bit of help there too, but you'll hear Gold every once in a while. He say, "Look, I may not listen. I may not do what you suggest," but he said, "I'm not so stupid that I won't listen to you." You know, and that's kind of the way I am.
Yeah. You know, Jeff, these characters that are in the stories, any of them modeled after people you know?
Oh, loaded question, huh?
I'm not going to use any names. There's people. When I see a really tough but compassionate sheriff or somebody, I know who that was modeled after. I had a great role model in my father and in uncles and in grandfathers. And when you see these good old boys that are a little bit rough around the edges, Yeah, that was those guys that I was hanging out in the pool halls with, or those were the cousins that I played music with or played golf with. So yeah, I know these people. And when they're really bad, yeah, I knew those too.
Yeah.
Did they recognize themselves in any of your stories?
Most of the people that I put in my stories can't read, so
you don't have a lot of friends watching right now, Jeff.
I think they just say that they can't read, so this is an excuse not to read my books.
I got you. You need to ask your favorite question.
Well, yeah, we had talked about this, you know, the other night. These characters ever surprise you and you get total control of them, or?
No, it's like herding cats.
There you go.
It really is. I will have a general idea of where the book is going to go, what the character's going to go through, what he's going to do to make it all work. And when I get to the last 3, 4, 5 pages, you know, it hits me. Okay, that's wrong. You can't do it that way. Yeah. And I've been thinking that way for, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks. But no, that doesn't work. So you have to take everything in. But even if you outline, you can't put down every thought and every word that a character is going to have. They're going to mature. They're going to grow. They're going to deviate through the book. And you have to take all that into consideration. So, yeah, they surprise the heck out of me all the time. And, you know, sometimes we, you know,
yeah.
a lot of button heads to get things done. And so far I've won more than I've lost.
Do they ever like knock and go, you need to write me in this story? I'm hanging out over here and I belong in that story. Do you ever have that happen?
I had a character that I wanted to write about. I never could figure out where he was going to go, how I was going to use him. And then my publisher says, we want you to write a creature series. This was 3 years ago or something. And I said, I don't even know what a creature series is. They said, yeah, you know, scary animals, scary whatever. And I said, that's where he's going to go. And I made him a first officer on a whaling ship out of Nantucket in 1836.
Oh my gosh. And
so it took me 10 years to figure out where he was going to go, but he went.
Yeah.
And he ended up being very good in that role.
Okay, yeah. Jeff, we have to step away again for just a moment to tell all of our listeners and watchers about one of the places that you can order the books of many of our author guests, the Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. Take a listen, and we'll be right back with more with Jeff Crawford. Don't go away. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking about our special guest tonight, Jeff Crawford. Jeff, we were just talking a break here. How did you find your publisher?
Yeah, you know, that's my favorite story in the world that I can tell in public. I was an independent writer, publisher. I did things my way, and because I didn't like rejection letters. So I wouldn't send books out because I didn't want to send 100 letters out and get 99 back saying you're no good. So I wouldn't do it. So yeah. I just published myself, and I got an email one day from a independent publisher that said, we'd like to look at this latest book. And I Googled them and researched them and found out that they were headquartered in the town I grew up in Florida. And I said, I can go see them, and it gives me a reason to go back. I said, I was looking for that. So I took off, and I was, you know, they thought this was a great idea. Fine, we're going to do this. So I finished up the last 2 months of the work on the book, and I was going to go back and settle everything. And right before I went, a man I knew, a writer, put a question on Facebook. As all it was a question. It says, can you write a horror? And I thought, that's a queer question. So I wrote back and I said, yeah. I said, that's what I did to begin with. I said, I've written two or three pretty scary books. And that's all I ever did, and went on. Well, next thing I know, I get a message from him. He says, we want you to write one. I said, we who? And he told me the publishing company he worked for. And I said, well, all right. And I had been decided I was going to quit after the book I published. But I got to thinking about it, and I said, no, I'm going to write one more and see what they do with it. And I wrote it and turned it in. And the girl says, I get a letter back. It says, we'll be back in touch with you in 3 to 6 weeks. I said, okay. And then 6 days later, I got a letter that says, when would you have time to meet with us?
There you go.
I said, okay, this is a little better. And we got on a Zoom call the next day, and hey, how you doing? I was trying to be real nice and, you know, have manners. And she said, we'll get back to that. She said, we don't want this book. She had printed it out. She's holding it up. She said, I don't want this. She said, I want three exactly like it. And I was trying my best to get a book deal. And all of a sudden, they were throwing a three book deal.
Hired. Out. You're hired.
And before I had finished the second book, I had signed a three more. So that it turned into a six book deal before I ever did the, before I ever finished the second book. And that was for this series,
yes.
The Darkest Sins, which was it's not a traditional horror. There's not a lot of bleeding and screaming and running and all that, but it is a Western, and it's what Andrew Weston, a writer friend of mine, says is a perfect example of an adult psychological thriller. So that's how I got signed, because I could write a horror story. Then they found out that I'd been a cowboy and could write a Western, and the gates kind of opened up after that. And they said, we want you to write every Western you can.
Yeah. Now, some of your books you've done with co-writes in the Micah Gold series, of the five that we knew about before the two, number six and number seven coming, through book six, three of them you co-wrote with others. How did the co-writing come about, and what's that like for you?
The co-write comes about from the publisher. I don't think I would ever have the courage. I'll chase a black bear, Jim. But I wouldn't have the courage to go up to another writer and say, hey, why don't you and I do a book together? Because I'm not sure if I could measure up. And I wouldn't want to put them on the spot. So my publisher comes to me and he says, I think you and this person would be a good fit for this type of a book. The Paul Thompson thing was unique in that I wrote a good bit of the book, and he did some fill in and some flowery stuff and sort of made it read a little nicer. The Charles Ray book was very different because it was me and him communicating back and forth, the entire way. Publisher wanted to write a prequel for the Micah Gold to see how it all started. So, I caught him up on what the character was like, and he was a dream to work with, just a jewel. Yeah. And then the Wayne Winkle was kind of bittersweet because that book had been started and then Wayne passed away while I was working on the book with Charles Ray. So I had to finish that book alone. And he was such a terrific writer. But I've done co-writes, a lot of them. I know a friend of yours.
Yes.
Carries a flintlock with Manuela Schneider.
With Manuela. Exactly. And Manuela, if you're watching or listening, hello, hello, hello.
How did you get hooked with Manuela, up with Manuela since she's clear over there in Germany?
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. Well, Nick, my publisher, he called me and he says, I know you think you're done with the Doc Hatcher series. I'd done 8 books or 9 books of that one. I said, yeah. He said, well, you're not. I want you to write one more. He said, I've got a lady that's a good writer that wants to write with Doc Hatcher in her story. Okay. So he started filling me in, and then me and Manuela got to talking, and all right. So we traded it chapter for chapter.
How fun.
Back and forth. And it was just a dream experience. She was so compatible to write with and comfortable as a friend. Yeah. She's just terrific.
Yeah. How fun is that?
Yeah, that's great.
You noticed about dialogue. Did you want to ask him about?
We had, yeah. Well, something about dialogue. Dialogue, yeah. We had a note here. You like dialogue best when tempers are hot. Isn't that what you said?
Yeah, I do. That's about the only time that I can put a coherent thought together for myself is when I'm pretty wound up, and my characters do it best that way too. But I like, yeah, I'm not very good conversationalist when I'm writing. I can do it, but it's not my favorite. But when tempers flare, when somebody's mad, when there's a life and death situation, that's when it is fun for me to let somebody yell and scream and bellow and roar and get it out. I've never told in a book the type of gun that Micah Gold carries.
And
I'm not going to. That's up to the reader's imagination. You know, I don't have to. What I do say is that he carries a cannon of a revolver that's slung low and tied tight.
You know,
and still, you can't scare somebody enough with that pistol as well as you can by getting right on top of them and screaming at them. Yeah. And that's what Micah Gold does.
Yeah, he does.
He'll yell at them, he'll bark at them, and scare them to death.
Yeah.
And I love writing that part of it.
Yeah. I'm looking at time, Jeff. We're going to step away for just another moment to hear from another of our sponsors, which is Jim and me and our business, outwestshop.com. And we're going to take a listen to this. And then when we come back, we're going to wrap up with Jeff Crawford. What fun. Stay right where you are. We'll be right back.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out outwestshop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer. We got special guest, Jeff Crawford. We have a couple more questions, but there's two we got to ask real quick to make
sure
we don't
run out of time. Yeah.
We get them in.
Yeah.
What's next and where can we find you?
What's next is 7, 8, 9, and 10 in the Gold series. I hope. I know 7. And then the best place to find me is my author page on Amazon. You can find everything there that I've written, but I'm all over the place on Instagram and TikTok, and I have two Facebook pages, Jeff Crawford and author Jeff Crawford. You can see everything that we're doing there.
So another series that I started reading, and I am looking at time. We only have like 1 minute to talk about this series. Oh my goodness. The yes, Black File Agents. Oh my gosh. You know what I'm reading tonight.
That was a dream come true to be able to write those. I had thought about those for years. And I finally talked my publisher into letting me do a Western that was part X-Files, part Wild Wild West. And he said, really? You want to do that? I said, one, it's going to attract younger readers, I hope. I said, but two, I said, I'm not hemmed in by anything. I said, there is no rules in this book. Yeah. I can let it all go wild.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, you can. He said, you can have your fun and still be a Western. And I said, yeah. So that's how they came about. And it's two agents exploring and understanding unexplained phenomenon in the old West.
It is such a fun read. You got President Grant in there, and you've got three guys, Mr. Steele, Mr. Wood, and Mr. Cole. And then, of course, we have our two agents, Will Kirkland and Julie Barlow. And I'm not going to tell you anything else because you just have to read these. You just have to read everything Jeff has written. You just have to read them.
By the end of this weekend.
Yeah. Jim has a quote I think that you can share. Jeff, this has been, Jeff, really, it's like been such fun.
Share at least one quote from the book. And this is from our Marshall. And he's always reflecting and brooding, actually, and he's reflecting on this particular idea. He says, chasing hard after that which will never be yours. That was a lesson he had taken his time in learning. There were many lessons he had learned over the years. That one had taken the longest to sink in and take root.
I do like Micah. Yeah. I would like to sit down and have a meal with Micah.
Well, he'd probably let you as long as you were buying.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we want to thank everybody for being with us tonight. And very quickly, we want to say that next week we will be attending the Western Writers of America conference in Amarillo. So if you're watching and you're going to be there, please check us out. Jim and I, along with Krista of Blue Cottage Agency, and Jake will be hosting a podcast panel on Saturday morning, next Saturday morning. So come and learn about being on a podcast. We will hope to see you there. So stepping in for us is our good friend who has graciously agreed to come next week, Tom Swearingen, who is a published poet and a recording poet artist, an award-winning, wonderful, wonderful gentleman and a great friend. Tom will be here with his special guest, Western writer Rick Steber, and they're going to be talking about a number of Rick's books, but his very newest one, Devil at the Gate, will certainly be one of the ones that they talk about. And so we would invite you to tune in next week. And Jim, do you have any other?
I do have a parting thought, but I want to say again, Jeff, it's so nice of you to be on the show. We had a good time, but I'm not going to go chase any bears, let me tell you.
I don't rightly blame you, Jim. I really don't. But I've had the best time. It's better than going to the state fair.
Well, that's pretty good.
Here's a quote for you.
So as we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing, and we'll keep reading. We'll see you down the trail. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.